Today, we will be discussing the ancient code of Hammurabi, and particularly, we'll make comparisons between it and the biblical law of Moses. This message is a follow-up to our recent study of the moral law in the book of Exodus, and I thought that there would be some value in considering how the law of Moses was distinct from the laws of the other people of the Near East at that time. This bonus message is entirely topical in nature. You have no passage to read. If you would like to read the Code of Hammurabi, we've provided a link to it in the library, which East Jordan neighbors can access once they've answered their quiz question. First things first. What is the Code of Hammurabi, and why are we considering it? The Code of Hammurabi is the ancient legal code of Babylon, written by Babylonian king Hammurabi a few hundred years before Moses' exodus from Egypt. A great stone engraved with this code was discovered by archaeologists in 1901, but the code was known prior to that from other documentation. And I will tell you what sparked my interest in reading the code. I was discussing the Law of Moses with an atheist, who remarked that the Law of Moses was just plagiarism from the Code of Hammurabi, which preceded it. Specifically, he stated that Moses got the words, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, from the Code of Hammurabi. And that is a pretty big claim. We believe that the Law of Moses was dictated by God himself from the top of Mount Sinai. We wouldn't expect that God would need to borrow material from some ancient Babylonian king. And it wasn't just this one atheist whom I encountered that said it. More than once during the course of our study of Exodus, I bumped into unbelievers who discounted the Law of Moses as plagiarism. Evidently, someone somewhere has started spreading this as an anti-Christian talking point. So I decided to test the claim that Moses had plagiarized his law from the Code of Hammurabi, and what I found is that he very clearly did not. But before we get into the sharp differences between the two codes, let's take a moment to consider some of the similarities. First off, Moses and Hammurabi share a certain similarity in form, which, I am told by trusted sources, was common among treaties, codes of law, and contracts from the ancient Near East. And it makes perfect sense to me that God, in enacting a covenant with his people, did so in a form which was familiar to them. Particularly, the form consists of giving a brief history explaining the document's purpose, followed by a listing of the terms of the document, in this case the laws, and concluding with curses against those who will disobey the terms. While both documents do have this in common, Moses' document differs significantly from Hammurabi's here, and that the Law of Moses often intermingles its historical accounts with its code of laws. In Hammurabi's document, the distinction between these two sections is much more clear. And of course, Moses' document, spanning five of the Bible's longest books, is vastly longer than Hammurabi's, which can be read through in an hour or so. Concerning form, Moses' delivery of his laws is also significantly different from Hammurabi's. Where Hammurabi's laws are codified in a dry, numbered, categorical list, Moses' laws have a much greater vibrancy. They are written in prose, often changing subjects and displaying a fair amount of repetition. And of course, the content within that form is also significantly different. Hammurabi's code has a truly blood-curdling list of curses, and while there are some similarities between these curses and Moses's, they are quite different in both style and substance. And, of course, they call on the names of a multitude of false gods, while Moses depends on Jehovah entirely. The opening narratives of these documents are also significantly different, and not just in their content. Hammurabi's opening narrative is little more than a listing of the names of some pagan gods with brief descriptors, followed by a list of kings who came before him, and some interesting but not at all detailed accounts of things that they did. Moses, much to the contrary, provided a rich, lengthy, personal, subtle, and beautiful narrative in world history from Genesis 1 to Exodus 20. So there does exist a certain similarity to the form, and we would expect that Moses would generally follow the writing formalities of his era in recording what God had told him. But that similarity is significantly overshadowed by the differences between these two documents. There is also some similarity in the content of the codes themselves. But those similarities tend to be of a very general nature, which we would expect from any code of law. So, for example, we see both codes dealing with common societal problems. They answer questions like, how do we punish murderers? Or how do we protect property rights? They consider questions of marriage, adultery, divorce, relationships between slaves and masters, and general economic problems. These are similarities we would expect to find in any social code of conduct, including those implemented in the modern day. Such codes exist to ensure some degree of harmonious relationships between people. And for all human history and all over the world, people have been dealing with a fairly similar set of relational problems. It is natural, then, that we'd find a similar set of considerations in both Moses and Hammurabi. Concerning the content of the codes themselves, we find some similarities in how things are handled. So, for example, both provide a death penalty for killing, kidnapping, breaking and entering, and adultery. Both codes contain the general principle that if one person violates another person's property rights by harming his body or damaging his property, he will have to make restitution. Both codes punish incest, pronounce regulations that limit terms of slavery, and put certain limitations on polygamy. But those are similarities that can be found in many codes of law all over the world and throughout all history, and that is where the similarities start to drop off. They say that a stopped clock is right twice a day, and Hammurabi's code agrees with Moses' law about as often. And some of the differences are pretty wild. In the first place, differences are found in that the code of Hammurabi is overly harsh. So, for example, where the law of Moses has thieves repaying double what they stole, in certain cases more, Hammurabi requires thieves to pay 30 times for a thing that is stolen. You can find that at Hammurabi's code number 8. Code numbers 115, 116, and others imply the use of imprisonment as a form of punishment. That's something that the law of Moses never contemplates, and which we find to be overly harsh and also unworkable. Code number 153 prescribes impaling people, which is a particularly brutal method of execution. They do this for a person who murders his spouse. And the Code of Hammurabi is obsessive about maiming its criminals by cutting off their body parts. If a woman works as a nurse and the child falls ill and dies in her care, it is presumed by code number 194 that she starved him, and for this, Hammurabi prescribed that her breasts should be chopped off. And lots of people in Hammurabi's day must have been walking around without hands. Hands could be chopped off for striking a parent, for removing the mark from a slave, for stealing from an employer, or even for doctors whose patients died on the operating table. If a slave said to his master, "You are not my master," his ear would be cut off, and the same was true of any laborer who struck a superior. If an adopted youth talks back to his parents, 192 prescribed that his tongue should be cut off. Per 193, if an adopted son attempted to return to his natural-born parent, his eye would be gouged out. And of note, the Torah never contemplates adoption, but Hammurabi deals with it frequently. Now, there are rough analogs to some of Hammurabi's harsh punishments in the Bible. We note that there is a death penalty, for instance, for striking a parent. But the only time that a person could be maimed under the law of Moses was if that person maimed someone else. Moses taught eye for eye, tooth for tooth, bruise for bruise, burn for burn. Hammurabi taught, if you do anything that bucks the social order, we'll cut you to pieces. The death penalty is also used excessively in the Code of Hammurabi. Now, the law of Moses has the death penalty for a few serious crimes, but Hammurabi would kill you for practically anything. According to code numbers 3, 9, and 10, anyone who makes an accusation that he can't prove in court gets the death penalty. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 25 provide a death penalty for serious acts of theft like stealing from the government or stealing livestock. 22 also provides death for a thief if he is caught in the act. Where the law of Moses forbids a person to return an escaped slave to his master, Hammurabi tells us in 15, 16, and 19 that a person should be killed for helping an escaped slave, and a person who escaped slavery could also be put to death. A person who failed to pay a mercenary hired on his behalf could also face the death penalty. And perhaps most tragically, code number 230 says that if a man accidentally kills a child, then his own child should be killed. This is a stark contrast to the law of Moses, which says explicitly in Deuteronomy 24:16 that fathers shouldn't die for their sons' crimes, and that sons shouldn't die for their fathers' crimes. Everyone is to be punished for his own sin. And it is not just the severity of the punishments that differentiates the law of Moses from the Code of Hammurabi. There are also considerable differences in how affairs were managed. For example, throughout the Code of Hammurabi, starting with code number 1, we have the use of trial by river. And it's no joke. If you're old enough, you probably remember the scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, a 1975 British comedy film, in which medieval Christians were mocked for throwing a woman into a river to test whether or not she is a witch. Well, we find nothing like that monstrosity in the Bible, but in the Code of Hammurabi, throwing people into the river to see if they would drown was considered a reasonable way to determine their guilt or innocence. Funny thing, the Law of Moses used actual trials, complete with appeals, to do that. Where Moses' law provides little governance of private transactions, Hammurabi's code prescribed considerable intervention into the functioning of the markets. There is price fixing for a wide range of activities in Hammurabi's code. Prices were fixed for alcohol, medical care, veterinary care, construction, shipbuilding, sailing, livestock rentals, and day laborers, which I would suppose constituted a large portion of the ancient Babylonian economy. Hammurabi also explicitly required written contracts for many simple business transactions, and failing to get a written contract could end with a person being executed for stealing. While the Law of Moses established a patriarchal society, Hammurabi's code is one that would be much more appreciated by the modern feminist. The Code of Hammurabi is sexually loose, explicitly permitting brothels and prostitution, which might explain why they had so much need for a society adopting children. And to that same point, while Hammurabi seemed obsessed with giving a death penalty or a maiming for everything, he fails to give it in one place where Moses requires it. Moses insisted that an unborn child was a living person, and that the one who killed it was a murderer. Hammurabi, on the other hand, required only 10 shekels in restitution for the death of an unborn child. Hammurabi's code also allowed for easy divorce and alimony for divorced women. Now, women could not divorce easily, but they could in some circumstances, like if their husband took a second wife. The Law of Moses didn't allow a woman to divorce under any circumstances and speaks very little to the subject of divorce at all. Hammurabi, however, devotes considerable attention to dividing up property between spouses. By code number 150, women were also allowed to own property apart from their husbands even while still married, and they could even will it to their sons at their death. And the differences go on. Moses outlawed the draft in Deuteronomy 20. Hammurabi permitted it in code number 26. Moses required that land pass within familial lines. Hammurabi presumed ownership of the land was vested in the state and could move freely therein. Moses outlawed the charging of interest. Hammurabi permitted it. Moses required that a betrothed virgin was legally bound as a wife in Deuteronomy 22. Hammurabi says in Code 128 that a marriage isn't binding until it is consummated. Hammurabi cracked down on dissent by holding tavern keepers liable for anyone who conspired in their taverns. The Law of Moses never contemplates conspiracy or taverns. Hammurabi added drowning to the list of acceptable death penalty execution methods. Moses never considered it. So it becomes obvious that there is a parade of differences between these two codes of law that make them barely comparable to each other. And it's not only differences in the content of the law, but also differences in how the law is applied. Moses required a general equality under the law, with only a few exceptions, primarily based on sex and citizenship. Equality is never a consideration in Hammurabi's code, and it is often explicitly spoken against. Hammurabi's society is heavily classed. There are slaves, there are people born free, and there are also freedmen in between who were born slaves but aren't slaves anymore. There are commoners, soldiers, chieftains, artisans, kings, judges, temple workers, prostitutes, and more, and the laws and the penalties for one class differ from the laws and penalties for another. Hammurabi's society is so deeply classed that when the code prescribes price fixing, it actually goes so far as to set different prices for different classes of people. So what the slave pays for medical services and what the free man pays for medical services aren't the same. Moses never comes close to anything like that. So there are major differences between the Law of Moses and the Code of Hammurabi, to be sure, but the original impetus for this little study was the accusation that Moses plagiarized the words an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth from Hammurabi. So does that claim check out? Well, I suppose we could answer no with a but, or yes with an if. It is correct that both documents contain the famous law of retaliation, but these laws aren't created equal. For one thing, Moses' eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for a hand, foot for a foot is part of a passage of prose, and it has a certain poetic rhythm to it. Hammurabi, on the other hand, maintains his numerical list style, and his commands are worded significantly differently, as follows from Hammurabi's Code Section 196 through 201. 196. If a man puts out the eye of another man, his eye shall be put out. 197. If he break another man's bone, his bone shall be broken. 198. If he put out the eye of a freedman, or break the bone of a freedman, he shall pay one gold mina. 199. If he put out the eye of a man's slave, or break the bone of a man's slave, he shall pay one half of its value. 200. If a man knock out the teeth of his equal, his teeth shall be knocked out. 201. If he knock out the teeth of a freedman, he shall pay one third of a gold mina. And it goes on that way. So I think you can see a significant difference here in form, in the wording, and even in the intent of the law. A freed man, one who was formerly a slave and set free but not born free, could have his teeth or eye knocked out, and there would be financial compensation, but no punishment for the one who knocked out the eye. And the same was true for a slave. Eye for eye and tooth for tooth in Hammurabi's day was only for those of a higher social rank. So the content is different. The style is different, the wording is different, the intent is different, and the form is different. The whole point of Moses' eye for an eye is treat everyone equally, but there's no equality in what Hammurabi wrote here. The only real similarity, apart from the mention of tooth and eye, is the general idea that a person who hurts someone else has to be hurt in response, but even then, there's wild inconsistency. So it seems pretty clear to me that Moses didn't plagiarize this from Hammurabi. God handed the real version of eye for an eye down to Moses on Mount Sinai, and Hammurabi, in a human attempt at justice, just so happened to come up with a similar but corrupted principle. In the end estimation, I think we should expect that. All people are made in the image of God, and all people have some sense, endowed by their Creator, of what justice is and is not. Seeing that people all over the world have dealt with similar problems for all of human history, it comes as no surprise that on at least some points, Hammurabi arrived at a conclusion that God would approve. It would be shocking indeed if a person set out to create a code of just laws and in the course of it did not come up with a single principle which accorded closely with God's definitive standard of justice. And honestly, we shouldn't even find it strange that Hammurabi mentioned a tooth and an eye. He was making a list of injuries a person might receive and how to compensate them. Eyes and teeth are particularly easy to damage. And finally, I come to what I believe is the most important difference between these two codes: the relationship of the law to God. Moses claims that his laws came directly from God, and that they were even written in stone with God's own finger. Hammurabi makes no such claim. Rather than giving some God's authority to his code of laws, Hammurabi gives all the authority to himself. He claims authorship of the laws to himself as well. Moses was the most humble man to ever live, a mere vessel through whom God worked. But Hammurabi never stops praising himself as righteous, great, valiant in battle, rescuer of his people, etc., etc., etc. Hammurabi's code is Hammurabi's code. He wrote it for himself, and he declares that those who follow it honor him, and are only honoring the gods whom he claims enthroned him in some secondary sense. The law of Moses, much to the contrary, is the law of God, and obedience to it honors God first, while Moses slips off into the shadows. And the difference doesn't stop at the authority. Moses not only claims that God is the authority behind his laws, but his code of laws also provides a way that those who follow it can become right with God. The gods of Hammurabi are some distant consideration. The God of the Bible is intimately involved in everything that happens, and in Moses' law, we have the establishment of a priesthood, a sacrificial system, and a designated place of worship so that the people could be cleansed of their sins and have a right relationship with the Creator of the universe. Such a thing doesn't even seem to cross Hammurabi's mind. Hammurabi was concerned with one thing only: maintaining himself as a king over a stable empire. He wanted to keep the society that he ruled over in functional order. If keeping people in line meant hacking them to pieces or tossing them into the river, Hammurabi was game. morality and relationship with God aren't really even part of the picture. So then, the original question was the law of Moses plagiarized from the Code of Hammurabi? To that I answer, absolutely no. The documents have a handful of similarities, but by and large, those similarities mark them as being relevant and valid legal documents from the ancient Near East, not copies of each other. And while it may be interesting that they both drew the same conclusion about knocking out someone's tooth or eye, they did so in significantly different ways. Just because Hammurabi was able to draw the logical conclusion of equal retributive justice doesn't mean that God had to borrow that principle from him. And Moses' laws proved to be the better set of rules. Our contrast of the two codes shows that Moses' law provided equal justice for all, provided reasonable and level-headed penalties for crimes, promoted a free people rather than one under the thumb of a slave state, avoided unnecessary meddling in the free markets, upheld a male-headed family structure, and proved itself to be a code worthy of emulation thousands of years later. The Babylonian Code of Hammurabi did not. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.